And how did you find that time when you're working full time to be able to prepare your comedy shows and that sort of thing?
I did a lot on the job. I was the worst employee you could possibly have.
Hey guys, before we start this episode, a big shout out to the Southern Slugs Footy Club and their support the last couple of years. They've been amazing. And speaking of the Southern Slugs, there's a big event that's happening over the Geelong weekend this year. It's over there in Bali. It's called the Bali Masters. So over 35s, over 45s and over 55s men. And the one and only Richard Champion, that ex-AFL legend from the Brisbane Lions, is playing in it. And there'll be a bit of comedy as well from Tommy Seagate, better known as the Suburban Footballer, of course, a social media sensation. So it's going to be absolutely awesome over there. And we're better to go as well than Bali for a Geelong weekend. So check out the Southern Slugs Football Club Facebook page for more details. It's going to be an absolute ripper. Well, what a pleasure it is to have Lizzie Hu on Comedy Legends with Bevo.
Thank you, Bevo. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, you're here for the Adelaide Fringe. Yes. Who's That Girl is your show. Tell us all about it.
Yes. So this is my fifth solo show, and it's a really fun show. I'm having a fun time doing it. There's not a lot of message to the show. It's just sort of about me. It's about my family. It's about my life. It's just a really fun time. Yeah.
And recently I heard you say it's a bit like you sort of liken the show to having a wine with your girls or your friends.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. It's sort of a few secrets come out. I feel like, yeah, a bit of dinner party vibes. Maybe things I shouldn't be saying. Things are definitely very embarrassing for me to say, some of the content.
Love that.
So I feel like when people leave the show that they might have a slightly different impression of me, I'm not sure.
Without giving too much away, can you sort of elaborate what you mean by the embarrassing stories?
Okay. Well, I went through a breakup last year, which is pretty major. That's fine. I'm fine. So it's I wouldn't be talking about it if I wasn't fine. That's put it that way. It happened before festival last year, so I didn't talk about it then. So it's been a year. So I'm good. So the show is a lot about like me dating again and like those sort of stories, which are just so funny and so embarrassing for me and the people I'm talking about, I would say. But then also just like things about my family that are just hilarious. And yeah, I think people will leave maybe, I don't know, a little bit shocked or something, or just be like, whoa, I wasn't expecting that. Maybe.
Interesting. Yeah. And I must admit, like, I've sort of been on the dating scene in the past over in Melbourne, and was on Tinder and what have you. And you're right, you meet some interesting people along the way. But being someone that people actually recognise as well, have you been on dates where people are like, oh, aren't you that girl from the TV show and that sort of thing? Or
it's surprising, or maybe it's unsurprising, the number of people who aren't into comedy, which is most people, I would say. So if you're not a comedy fan, like, why would you know me? So I feel very comfortable on a dating app and people don't know.
Have you been attention? They don't come up to you and say that?
There's been one person who I went on a date with, and we hadn't had a conversation about what we did for work. And I think I asked him and then I said, oh, I'm not sure if I've told you what I do for work. And he said, oh, I know. And I'm like, oh, okay. But that's the only time that's happened.
Okay, interesting. Mm. So you've tried like the Hinge and the Tinders and all of those?
I'm on Hinge at the moment and not currently because I don't have time. I'm not wasting my brain space on Hinge, to be honest. But like when I do, I do a lot of pausing and unpausing on dating apps.
I used to do the same thing as well.
Yeah, because it's like, it is a lot of headspace.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time out from your life. So I found over Christmas and January when I wasn't that busy, I was trying to date as much as I could. And now I'm in my very busy festival season. I'm like, sorry.
Is it hard, like going on a dating scene, being in your 40s as well? By the way, you look fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I wouldn't have thought you looked 40 at all. I know. Got to get yourself an Asian dad. That's the trick. I don't think so. I think it's just the same, to be honest. There are single people in all generations, I would say. And I don't think it's different. I think when you're in your 30s, maybe you're looking for someone that you want to spend the rest of your life with. And maybe in your 40s, you have a bit more perspective, especially if you've gone through a big breakup or a long-term relationship breakup. And you kind of, you know, you've got a bit of a different need. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it totally. And let's hear more about the Lizzie journey, because it's been a very interesting one. Grew up in Brisbane, lived in Sydney, now you live in Melbourne. But yeah, you've done all sorts of bits and pieces, like you've been on TV, as I mentioned, you're an actor, you've been a designer, a writer.
Yeah.
It's a lot of different things, plus obviously being a stand-up comedian. But yeah, tell us more about the Lizzie journey.
Oh my gosh, I've had so many jobs. It's, yeah, I think I just never found something I liked until I did comedy. And every other thing that I tried along the way, designer, writing, I used to work for magazines and did a lot of editorial work and stuff like that. I even at one point worked for a really big accounting firm, and I was in their bids and tenders team writing tenders.
Wow.
Can you believe that? So it's like the most boring job in the world, I would say. And then my job previous to comedy was as a marketing account manager at a marketing agency. So that's just like a lot of client calls and like relationships and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, when I started comedy, I was like, I actually love this. Like I am not, it surprises me that I'm not sick of it. Yeah.
And where did you get that passion for comedy? Where, was there someone like a friend that said, Lizzie, you're pretty funny? Or yeah, how'd that come about?
No, not really. I think growing up, I always loved comedy. Growing up in the 90s in Australia, we had such good sketch shows on TV, and my brother and I would always watch them. And I even remember going to the Echo, which is Brisbane's show, and getting the Comedy Company show bag.
Oh, love that show.
That was one of my favorites. And I had in this show bag, it had a whoopee cushion. It had a plastic Comedy Company visor. I remember going to this restaurant in Brisbane for my eldest brother's 18th birthday. He's a lot older than me. And I would have been, when he was 18, seven. And it's at this, it was called Crazy's Comedy Club. And all the waiters were dressed up as comedy characters. So Kylie Mole, Connor Fruiterer. And I've got this photo with Kylie Mole.
That's amazing.
It's really, well, you know, a fake, not the Kylie Mole, but fake Kylie Mole.
Yeah, it's still amazing though. Yeah.
But I was like so stoked to have that. So I think as a young child, I loved it. And then I moved away from the idea of being a comedian, or like even knowing that that was a thing you could do. And then it was something I revisited in my 30s when I moved to Sydney, and I was sort of looking for a hobby. And I tried all these courses at Sydney Community College, right? I did a millinery course, which is hat making, sewing course. And then I got an email from Sydney Community College that said, try stand-up comedy. And I thought, yeah, why not? I'll try it. This could be fun. This could be a good thing for me. It could be like I was sort of wanting to build my confidence at work with public speaking and stuff like that. And I tried it and I really liked it. And I felt it ticked a lot of boxes for me. Like it was creative. I got to write, which I like doing. And it was really satisfying writing a joke and people laughing. So it became quite addictive, I would say.
Mm. Was there, I know you mentioned before the comedy company, but was there other like current comedians or past comedians that have been influenced on you, Lizzie?
It's interesting because before I started comedy, I'd never been to a comedy club. Like I'd never gone to a fringe festival. I'd never gone to a comedy festival or anything like that. So the comedy that I started to watch, especially when I first started, was like on Netflix. Ali Wong had just put out her first special. She's huge inspiration to me, but I love, there's other American comedians I love, like Michelle Wolf and Beth Stelling and Maria Bamford. Growing up, I knew the Australian comedians through the radio. I think that was my touch point for them. Like Will Anderson was someone I grew up listening to. Helen Razor and Judith Lucy when they were on Triple J. So that was sort of my relationship with comedians in Australia. But I never once saw them do live comedy until I started doing comedy.
And gig number one, tell us about that. What was that like? Where'd you perform? And
oh, well, it was through the community college. So the guy, the instructor that who did the course, he put on a friends and family show at the end of the course, and you were meant to invite like 20 people. I invited everyone I knew. It was, looking back on that, is that's crazy. That's insane. That is some really weird stuff to invite. I invited my bosses. my cousins, friends, everyone I knew in Sydney at the time came to this night to watch me do stand-up comedy for the first time, which is insane.
Wow.
And I really enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed the performing. I enjoyed the thrill. And I think the teacher said to me, oh, you should keep going. And I think that's all I need, you know, is someone to say, hey, you were really funny. You should keep doing this. And I was like, oh, okay, let's do that. And then it took me a while after that night to go and experience an open mic and things like that. And I think if I had experienced open mic before I'd experienced the night after the course, I probably wouldn't be sitting here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because open mic is brutal.
Yeah.
And it was, I was just in my 30s, right? I had a job. I'd rock up to these open mics and, you know, you put your name in a hat. You might one of 40 people, you get called out. You could be there till like 11, 11:30 at 12 at night, waiting for your 4 minute spot.
Wow.
And I was just like, what am I doing? Like, I have a job, I have a life, I have friends. Why am I doing this? And for some reason, I kept going back and I kept doing it. And yeah, I just think I just got better and better and I just kept showing up. Mm.
Has there been gigs where you've just completely bombed and had that work out for you as well?
Oh, all the time. That's a weekly occurrence. I would say working up a new show is mostly bombing.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's hard. I mean, it might not look like that to the audience, but inside you're like, oh, that's terrible. Like listening back, the process to writing a new show is, you know, you do it, you record it on my phone. I listen back to it the next day. And even if I thought I've had a good show, I listen back and go, whoa, that is bad. So yeah, it's quite, I feel like at the moment I'm bombing all the time.
Wow, that's amazing to hear that from someone who's been doing it for a while and doing it so successfully. So
yeah, I mean, I probably have pretty tough standards on myself. Like, but I'm very new to comedy, I would say still. I'm like 7, 8 years in.
Wow.
I feel like that's quite,
yeah, that's still new for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Compared to someone like Tahir and those sort of George Papanias and those sort of guys.
20, 30 year comics. Yeah. Like you see them get up and probably it's all like relative, right? They're probably thinking they're bombing. But to us, it's like, oh, you just look like a natural. Like it's all just, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And where do you, I know you mentioned before about the Who's That Girl show, but past shows, where have you got your material from for those?
Family plays a big role for me in my comedy. They're just so funny. Like I come from, I think as I've gotten older, I think I always knew that my family was a little bit crazy and weird. But as I've gotten older, definitely I'm like, oh, you guys are nuts. So my dad is hilarious. He's just so funny. And some of his stories are great. You can come to the show and find out all about those. But yeah, and then just the contrast with my mom as well and my brothers, and we're just a bit of an odd bunch, I would say. I'm the most normal.
Because you're part Irish and part Asian, is that correct?
Yeah, my mum's family has an Irish background. Dad is Chinese Malaysian. So, yeah, it's, yeah, I was raised Catholic, went to Catholic schools, but my dad never became a Catholic. So, yeah, it's just an interesting contrast at home.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I don't think I've ever met someone who's Irish and Asian. That's amazing.
Really? So,
yeah, that is amazing. Have you spent much time in Ireland as well?
No, I haven't. I've been there two or three, maybe three times, but, I haven't really dug into that side of the family history yet.
And what about at the moment? Like, is there an existing comedian that you have as a bit of a mentor, Lizzie, that you speak to a bit and like maybe show them your shows and then they give you a bit of feedback and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm working with Tom Ballard at the moment. He's directing my show.
Past guest of mine. He's a lovely guy.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yes. And he's so great. Like, he's such a good comic. So that's been really great working with him. So, yeah, I like working with other people, I think, because I came from a job where you're constantly working with people. In comedy, I like to like sit down with people and like brainstorm ideas and stuff like that, which I feel like might be quite uncommon in this industry.
And now you're doing this full time, which is just amazing. Mm. When did you get to that situation where it's like, oh, I can actually quit my job and just do this full time and live in the dream?
Oh, it took a while. At first, I went 4 days at work, so I cut down from 5 to 4. And then I eventually just was like, okay, I think I can do this. Yeah. But there were, I did 2 comedy festivals, Melbourne comedy festivals, whilst I was working. Like, I remember my first Adelaide Fringe Festival, I was working during the day and then gigging at night.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's hectic.
It was really hectic. Now that I look back on it, at the time it was just something I'd been doing for like 4 years, you know, just doing the 2 jobs and managing. And now I look back on that and I'm like, okay, that was a lot of, that was a lot of work that you were doing, a lot of time where you weren't doing anything for yourself, really. Yeah. So, yeah, so I'm like I have done a lot in my short time in comedy, but then I also think, like, I worked pretty hard.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well done. And how did you find that time when you're working full-time to be able to prepare your comedy shows and that sort of thing?
I did a lot on the job, let's be honest. I was the worst employee you could possibly have. And especially COVID times, I was working at home. Like,
perfect.
Yeah, yeah, but I'd say maybe a lot of the jokes that I wrote in my first 2-3 years are probably the property of my old work.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And also found out recently from doing a bit more research about you, Lizzie, you've done skydiving.
I have.
How was that experience?
I've done it twice now. Okay.
You're crazy.
Well, the first time I did it was with my mum.
Wow.
Yeah, at her 60th birthday. She's 70, almost 78 now, so this is going back a bit. But for her 60th birthday, she said, I want to skydive to my 60th birthday party. And I was like, I guess, 20-ish at the time, and I was like, I can't let my mom skydive before me, so I went with her. And then I just did it recently. Last year, I got to skydive over Rottnest Island WA. Cool. It was spectacular. I would say it was probably one of the best locations you could skydive over. Like, the water is incredible. Yeah.
And obviously you're not scared of heights then? Or?
No, I didn't. It does not faze me. The plane doesn't faze me, the jumping out. And I think it has something to do with my life is in someone else's hands, so I give full responsibility to that person. If something happens, it's their fault, not mine. So I'm like, I have full trust in that person.
And when you're jumping out of that plane, what's that feeling like for someone that's never done it? And probably I would never do it because I'm scared of heights, unless someone maybe forced me to do it and paid me $1 million, perhaps.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, you jump out, you don't even jump out, you fall out. So you just sort of fall out with the gravity, and then you free fall for maybe a minute or two. And then the rest of it is just scenic. Like, you've got a guy strapped to your back and he's trying to make you do shuckers into the camera. And it's actually kind of boring. Like, that's why you have to do it somewhere where there is a beautiful view.
Yeah, like Rottnest.
Yeah, yeah, like Rottnest. Any beach, I reckon.
Gold Coast would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Gold Coast would be beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it gets kind of awkward with this person strapped to your back.
Yeah. I wonder what sort of speed you go, because it just looks like...
Oh, I don't know, like, but it's quick.
It's quick. It's probably almost as fast as like going in a Formula One car or something like that, I can imagine. So,
yeah, maybe even faster. I'm not sure, but it is. It's quick. Yeah.
Yeah, nuts. And you've also done a bit of surfing, I see, because you've got a brother in Bali, is that correct?
Oh, yes. Well, he's there right now, actually. But he used to live there, and then he lives in Indonesia. And last year, for my other brother's 50th, we went there for a little family holiday, and I decided to surf for the first time in a very long time. And I'm not as nimble as I used to be, I think. And I was having such a good time. I was like, oh my gosh, why don't I surf more? I'm not very good. I was on basically, like, you know, a big foamy. I'm on a boat, basically.
Yeah.
And I get up and I'm like, I simultaneously had the best time and worst time, because I got up and I was really proud of myself, but then I also did my back. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I got up for like 2 seconds, and then you just see me go, dum. And I was like, I've done something here. And so that was day 2 of my holiday. And for the rest of the time, I was just in pain.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
It was How horrible. Is it now?
It's fine now.
That's good.
But I guess just old lady problems. I have to keep stretching.
And what else? You mentioned I'm sort of getting a bit of an understanding that you'd like a bit of adventure sort of stuff.
Love travel. Like in my 20s, I traveled everywhere. That was a real big thing for me. I think that is up there with comedy. Travel and exploring is also something I love to do. But obviously that has its limitations. You can't just travel every day.
Yes.
Unless you're a millionaire.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I love going overseas. I love visiting new places. Yeah.
And you recently moved to Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
What's that experience been like? And what was the reason for the change?
Yeah, just something different. Yeah, do something different. And Melbourne's great. It's really good art scene. My theory is because the weather's so terrible. Like no one's outside. Everyone's inside. So that's the difference, I would say, between Melbourne and Sydney's comedy scene is that Melbourne's a lot better because people want to be inside. Whereas in Sydney, why would you want to be inside?
Yeah.
The beaches are awesome. The weather's better. Yeah.
I'm getting photos of the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Sydney Opera House and what have you. And
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're living in Brunswick East, which is
yes.
a pretty fancy area.
Yeah, it is. I call it Tesla country. Yeah. Yeah. It's like lefties with money. I'm renting. Okay. But
yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's cafe culture. It's bougie. I get it.
And I want to ask you about something else before I let you go as well. Recently, I went to see Chopper, Heath Franklin.
Yeah.
So funny. And we've got a mutual love for that show. And you mentioned as well on a chat with someone from a couple of years ago, actually, it might have been Diana Nguyen, I think. And you talked about how with comedy, you can be yourself and be a bit more looser. And Heath Franklin, a perfect example of that with the whole PC world that we live in. Explain that a bit more. And I guess, you know, you being able to sort of be a bit more out there rather than the world we live in, which is so PC.
Yeah. You've got to be careful because I think there are definitely things I think you can joke about everything, but you have to be good at it. Like, you know, those people, those comedians that you see joking about stuff that's not PC or whatever, they've been doing it forever, right? Like, and the thing is, you know, I feel like open micers watch a Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle and they think they can do the same thing. It's like, no, you can't.
Yeah.
That took them 30 years to pull that off. You can't do it after 1 week of doing comedy, mate. Like, just talk about your family, talk about yourself, talk about, like, I think there are easier topics to tackle before you talk about Hitler. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, I think you need to recognize that, especially when you're starting out.
It's a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just, yes, you can joke about anything, but do you have the skills to joke about anything?
Yeah, and like I said before, you got to be a little bit careful.
And yeah, and do people want to hear you joking about that subject?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Like, we can be a bit sensitive at times.
Yeah, I think sometimes people go into these topics discounting like all the other interesting things happening in their life. And I think they don't realize that audiences want to hear about you and like what you have to say and like what your experiences are.
Rather than your opinions.
Rather than your hot take on a dictator that died 60 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just like, ugh.
And has there been situations where you've told a joke and it's gone a bit pear-shaped and how have you dealt with those situations, Lizzie?
Yeah, there's definitely times when, you know, crowds react differently to jokes and some crowds are a bit more conservative than others. I find if you joke about race or something like that, some crowds pull back, some crowds don't, and then understanding why they pull back. But then also, if you know how to do it and you know how to craft a joke, every crowd should be laughing. Yeah.
Yeah,
It's a very fine art, like, to find the balance, yeah.
Yeah, I can just imagine.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, before we let you go, Lizzie, who's that girl? You're performing all around Australia this year, and obviously, hopefully, we'll see you on TV soon with Have You Been Paying Attention and the other things you're involved in as well. But give your show a plug.
Oh, yes. Come and see Who's That Girl. I'll be performing in a city near you. You can jump on my website, lizziewho.com, or look me up on Instagram at lizziewho and get all the details.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.